I wanted to say how happy and excited and honored I am to be here today, and I want to thank Susan for that wonderful introduction. And it's interesting, when I walk into a church, I always look at the stained glass windows and note how many women are pictured in the stained glass windows, and I didn't get a chance to look at anything real well. But I have to say, over here, there are five women. So that's a real plus for me. And the other thing I wanted to comment on is I saw the plaque, and Susan also mentioned that Dr. King preached from this pulpit, so I'm sure I will never be as good as Dr. King, but I got the chills when I heard that comment. So, as you well might imagine, I have been on one heck of a journey in the last 12 years, and I've learned quite a bit about living outside the pale of a monolithic institution that has declared that by my becoming ordained, I excommunicated myself, much like women used to get themselves pregnant back in the old day, remember, without the benefit of man? So that's how I got excommunicated, without the benefit of man. And I've also learned quite a bit about who becomes members of these new communities that are formed. And just a hint, it's not your family, except your spouse. It's not your family or your friends, or even supporters that might have come to your ordination. It's perfect strangers who then become your family and your friends. So I like to believe that we in Roman Catholic Women Priests and at St. Mary Magdalene have been blessed with a unique vision as we live on what Richard Rohr would call the inside. And I think we're just sort of right on the inside of the edge of a traditional Catholic existence. On one hand, we have met very friendly people, like you all, who are not Catholic, who accept us wholeheartedly and regard us as valid members of the clergy with a duly constituted congregation. And the Unitarians, for example, I didn't ever realize, I have to confess, in 41 years of living in Mount Airy, I've never been here and I had no clue how big this church was. But we've had ordinations in Unitarian congregations in other cities, in the United Methodist churches, and also at Mishkan Shalom in 2009, where Rabbi Linda Holtzman was she led in our processional and delivered our opening prayer. Reformed Catholics support us as well, even as they continue to worship in their parishes, fruitlessly hoping, I would say it's fruitless, for the Catholic Church to change. We will see what will happen as a result of the latest grand jury report and the alleged complicity of Pope Francis in covering up sexual abuse or the behavior of some of the clergy. But I have to confess to you that I am not going to hold my breath for one second in spite of the depth of the scandal, because all of this stuff has been in the public eye since 2002. I joked to a friend recently that I would actually eat my nurse's license on YouTube and face it on Facebook if any of the bishops resigned or if Pope Francis called for any of the bishops to resign. So if that happens, you can look me up on Facebook. Because I rather suspect that there is a grand jury report in every single city, in every single diocese, in every single country of the world. I rather think that the hierarchy fully expects that the people will accept their endless apologies and move on, just as they've done so in the past. And if you recall, this is the fourth grand jury report in Pennsylvania, and each one has been equally horrific. But it just seems to blow over because so many good people really believe that it's their church, and they show up one Sunday and they make their donations, even as the bishops continue to call all the shots. As you know, time is always on the side of tyrants. On the other hand, the traditional Catholic Church, the church characterized by these sex scandals, they regard women like me as anathema. Pope John Paul II instructed Catholics that they weren't even supposed to talk about women's ordination. And according to the papal pronouncement made by Benedict in 2009, when we all allegedly excommunicated ourselves, illicitly ordained women, like me, are worse than pedophiles. And you heard, that's exactly what was said. We are worse because we actually are a threat to the survival of the Catholic Church. It's unbelievable. I actually wrote something that was in the Philadelphia Inquirer that addressed this issue. And unfortunately, some members of the clergy pass this on to their faithful beliefs, which has often resulted in some unkind actions like sending nasty emails. And those members of the clergy who do support women priests keep their lips sealed, lest they lose their job, because sadly, their first loyalty is to their bishops, to whom they took an oath of loyalty, not to their people, and not even to truth or justice, but to the bishop. So it is really no wonder that the Catholic Church is one hot mess. But then it's always been. We just didn't know about it. The excommunication and the lack of support really doesn't bother me in the least. I just tell you about it to give you some perspective. Because over the course of the last 12 years, I've come to live most comfortably on the inside of that ledge, with my fellow cliff dwellers, almost all of whom are refugees from the institutional church. I used to joke and call our parish the Island of the Lost Toys. Anybody remember that from the 1960s, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Yep. Only we aren't the least bit sad, and we don't seek acceptance or approval of the institutional church. As songwriter Sarah Groves expressed the sentiment we at Mary Magdalene feel, the place that used to fit me cannot hold the things that I've learned. So in other words, the community of St. Mary Magdalene, my parish, has officially gotten rid of the Catholic Church. So my preparation for living on the edge began when I was a kid growing up in Port Richmond. In spite of the fact that I attended Catholic school in Philadelphia from first grade to college, and I learned very well the party line of obedience and conformity, it didn't take too much time for me to realize that the edge that I've been mentioning, the once feared area where the church warned we would be gnashing our teeth trying to get back in, that edge is really a very desirable place. And it's filled with all sorts of really good ideas that make a whole lot of sense, more sense than the parochial vision I was expected to conform my conscience to. And in addition, there's a whole lot of room out there on the edge. And best of all, I came to realize that some really interesting people lived out there on that ledge. So I'm in the process of writing my second book called Taking Out the Saints. And in that book, I hope to replace traditional Catholic saints like popes and members of religious orders, royalty, Catholic apologists, defenders of the faith, and doctors of the church. And I'd like to replace them with people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King, Irene Sen, Hannah Senesch, Oscar Schindler, and Cesar Chavez. I'm glad that you awakened my conscience to him. I had forgotten about him, just to name a few. And these people need to be canonized as saints for the world, models upon which people of any age or religious background can model their lives in order to repair the world in which we live, a task that is far more important than following any church's dogma or doctrine or creed or worrying about one's personal salvation, which is oftentimes, unfortunately, the driving force behind much of what Rabbi Rami Shapiro calls name brand religions. And what I found while doing my research is probably going to be very obvious to all of you sitting here. The majority of people who have done anything worthwhile in this world occupy the ledge, like Cesar Chavez. They have all been outliers, almost to a person. The existence of some might be a footnote in an academic book, in some out-of-print, a footnote in an out-of-print book that somebody like only me, a nerd, would read. Or more important, movements that are ignored by mainstream history. Anybody here ever hear of the Poor Men of Lyon? Good group to look up. We might know them by the charges made against them because their books might have been burnt. They might have been burnt. Their theories might have been discredited, their motives suspect, according to the authorities who believe that they are in charge of the historical narrative. So let me give you a couple examples. I found a book in the Lutheran Seminary Library called Holiness in the Old Testament. I told you I'm a nerd and I read really weird books. And it's by this Professor Snaith. I don't even think his first name was listed. Fluent in many ancient languages, Snaith wrote back in the 1940s that what became Christianity was influenced more by early Greek Christians relying upon the philosophy of Aristotle and Plato than by the vision of Jesus. And this insertion of unbaptized Greek philosophy into what became Christianity altered its path. So it was these Greek Christians, and not Jesus, who formulated the Nicene Creed and the Trinitarian theology. One example in his book was absolutely breathtaking, and I think it bears with what's going on in the Catholic Church today. Snaith claimed that Greek Christians mistakenly used the Greek word hagios rather than hieros. I don't know if any of you are linguists. I'm not. To translate the Hebrew word for holy. According to Snaith, this mistranslation using hagios added the dimension of purity to the definition of holiness, which led to the Christian belief that sexual purity and celibacy were required for one to be holy and pleasing to God. So one must wonder what the Western world would look like had purity and asceticism not been an indicator of holiness. My second example is a new book called Crispina and Her Sisters. Anybody hear of that one? It's a great book, a little long, but good. The author, a religious sister named Christine Shank, studied the grave inscriptions of hundreds of tombs in the catacombs of Rome, where she found any number of inscriptions and sculptures and pictures of powerful women who are pictured as presiding at the Eucharist, standing with scrolls,